Sports Talk powered by fans. Sports Radio 810 WHB Kansas City. The power of sports.
It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickled to death to be with you this Saturday and every Saturday. I hope we're still above ground, taking nourishment. We know one another. That when you finally get to the point where you don't recognize anybody, I don't know if that's quality of life or not. You know,
I would say no.
I'd say no. Now, if you saw our producer on the street, would you recognize him or would you say hello to him?
I would.
You would?
Uh-huh.
He seems like a nice guy.
He is.
Uh-huh. You think he really is?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, really? Huh, you'd vote for him?
I would.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would be? Don't you have to have a reason to vote for someone?
I think a lot of people just do it because of looks.
Looks.
It looks good.
I understand now. That voice you're hearing is my co-host, the grand poobah of the crappie jig industry, Mark Tobin. I don't know why I say that.
You're a strange duck.
Now, you don't talk about strange duck. I had a conversation with Chris Todd, one of our listeners.
Well, I have to laugh. Did he do a Clouseau impersonation for
you? Oh, boy. So I figured when it first started at Clouseau, I thought, well, this is some drunk person who's dialed the wrong number. So being tolerant that I am, I hung in there for a while, and pretty soon I kind of figured him out, but it took me a while. He's a little rusty on his clues, though.
Yes, he worked on that for a while.
Did he?
Yeah.
What
he
a
was
nice going to
call in and do that.
What a nice
air.
Guy.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah. He won one
of our stay coolers.
Yeah, that's right, he did, and we gave them away.
Yeah.
TheStayCooler.com. That's many people asked me about that last week. I thought we'd mention it three times, that thestaycooler.com, 20% off you put the and down the discount, put Fred in there.
This is the cooler that's like a Yeti, but
exactly, yeah.
Not near as expensive, but just as good.
Yeah, and then get 20% off.
Yeah, right.
When you go to the checkout down there, it says something about discount, and you just put the F-R-E-D in there.
It's like 30, 40% less than a Yeti to begin with, and then you take another 20% off. Yeah. That's a good deal.
It'd be a good Christmas gift, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for the outdoor. Well, you really don't even have to be an outdoors person. If you like cold beer or cold food, this will keep
beer,
it.
Beer. Cold beer.
It'll keep it cold. It's even got a bottle opener.
Yeah. You got one, don't
I
you?
I do. I love it.
It's a good one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, you put ice in it, it'll stay in there for a week. Yeah,
forever.
Yeah.
Man, that's a good cooler.
Yeah,
no doubt about it. Yeah, so what the hey. Next Saturday, of course, I'm going to be AWOL.
Yes, you will. After a long year, here we go.
And we'll be sitting in a duck blind, good Lord willing, the creek don't rise. And we got the plug in the tube, and we're getting ready to pump some water. And we probably got a little corn standing here, there, and yon.
That's miraculous. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, it was a miracle.
And some of it made.
A little bit of it did. The corn gods were smiling on us, evidently.
Jeez.
So, boy, it took forever to plant. It was so darn muddy.
Yeah, and, right. All that flooding.
My good friend let me use his planter, and I'd go about 15 yards and get underneath of it. I still got them spots where it's got them real sharp calters on this thing, and you get in there with your pliers and try to dig that mud out, and you cut yourself a lot, you know. But, it was quite an experience, but we finally got something, a little bit of corn going. It don't look too good, but what the hey. A lot of waterfowl showed up this week.
Did it?
Primarily up around, I was up around the refuge, of course, and at Squaw Creek, which is not Squaw Creek, but we'll call it Squaw Creek. A lot of pintails showed up. A lot of gadwalls showed up. Quite a few mallards, not very many, but a little. I haven't seen a snow goose yet, which is very odd. Quite a few of the black geese in, but just shovelers. My goodness, the world is full of shovelers, and I don't know. They make good targets. They're dumb. You shoot at them, they turn and come back. Now I got to pass along a couple of little things. My buddy's kitchen, the Sitka rep, was up in Saskatchewan, just over the North Dakota line.
You got to say A when you're from North Dakota.
Beauty, yeah.
A. They had some of the best waterfowl shooting of their career. And then also talked to the humans with Kent Cartridge Company. They were up there somewhere, and they said they couldn't believe the success that they had. I think there was they killed 384 birds in 3 days or 5 days or whatever it was. So maybe. And I'm watching the migration map. A lot of birds. It's been really cold up in North Dakota. I think 22 the other morning. And still the birds are hanging in up there. Pretty darn tough.
Well, we got some cold weather coming next
week. That's what they say. Maybe,
and that could be good timing.
Could be, yeah, the immaculate reception could be next week.
<You're right>.
You know, in 1969, I hit one of those ducks. He came flying by, and I'm sure it was me who hit him. I don't know. Everybody shot, but I claimed him. You know.
We could use some immaculate receptions on the Chiefs game Sunday night.
I don't think so. I think the Chiefs will work on them like a yard dog. Yeah. I mean, they'll beat them like a stump. Man. I mean,
I'm hoping.
Yeah, 52-6 or something like that. You
that
know,
might be a little lofty, but
you think it is?
Well, if Patrick Mahomesies could be playing,
Mahoney,
Patty Mahomes,
Mahoney.
As our Irish board operator once told us.
Yeah, Patty Mahomes. That kind of stuck around. I hear it around the league. So he. Yeah, unbelievable. Now, you guys are going deer hunting this morning, which I'm jealous. I got that trusty bow in the back of your – I hope you got it encased, I think. No, that's all in Michigan. You have to have your bow encased.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, stupid. But what the hey. The deer are on their feet. Deer are starting to move. Between here and St. Joseph, Missouri this morning, I must have saw 6-8 bloody spots.
Dang.
You know, they might be a week old bloody spots, but they're really working on a deer. For you guys driving right now, be very, very careful. Boy, they are moving. It's pre-rut. Rut will start in probably 10 to 12 to 14 days, somewhere in there, depending on where you're at. But I don't know what's going on. We went through a phase up there in northwest Missouri. It was to shoot a deer, to see one even, was quite an establishment. But they came rebounding back. I'm seeing deer all over the place.
Good news.
I saw 8 does the other morning in one bunch, 4 in another bunch, 2 in another bunch. So they're starting to move, and we're starting to get a little comeback on the deer. The CWD, if you're afraid of the CWD thing, have them checked. You know, if you're going to grind up that meat and consume it yourself, make sure it gets checked before, you know, there's a real simple test you can get done. And I think it's much to do about nothing. It's harder on the deer than it is the humans, of course. They keep saying that no CWD has ever transferred over into human capacity on the deal. So what the hey, you know. So, but boy, if you can man enough and tough enough, which you'd be tough enough, Tobin, stay in the tree all day. You could do that.
I could do that.
You could do
take
that.
A little nap off and on. But
did you?
Yeah.
Go and get a little nippy up there this morning.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, they're talking lows in the low 20s, like Wednesday, Thursday next week.
Snow, S-N-O-W.
That dirty four-letter word.
Ooh.
Not ready for that.
Ooh. And one computer model's got some accumulation.
Don't want that yet.
That's bizarre. So, what the hey. Waterfowl Hall of Fame next Saturday. I am going to try to attend. I think I can. I got a commitment, but I think I'm going to get out of it. But the inductees consider of Randy Patterson, Rob Bolin, and Art Van Meter. And Randy Patterson is one of my dearest friends, one of the nicest people I've ever known in my entire life, other than Mark Tobin, of course, you know. But he's just a great human. He does so much in northwest Missouri to help out duck hunters. And he'll drag his planter to here, there, and yon for these guys and try to do them right and try to get them something going. He's a really cut-in duck, and he's a great shot. I hate to tell him that on the air, but he's a great shot, and he's just a good guy. From a 1 to a 10, 10 being the best, he's an 11.
Dang.
That's how good a person this guy is. It's just an honor to be around him. He's a great guy. So if I can get out of this other commitment, I am going to be sitting at his table at the Waterfowl Hall of Fame. If you've never been to one of these, it's going to be pretty darn cool.
Is it open to the public?
Yeah. I think it's $35 to get in, and the money goes to other causes, you know, to Ducks Unlimited or Delta or somebody, but the overflow of that money. And they auction off stuff, and it's and everybody gets up and gives an acceptance speech and a deal. We had Brent Brzee has been inducted, Tom Watson, Ted Wims is in the Waterfowl Hall of Fame because he hunted so much out of Mound City.
Fred Ramsey.
Yeah, well, just barely by the skin of my teeth, you know. Couldn't find a way else that year. I stand around on a gravel road, and they came by and said, hey, you want to be in the Waterfowl Hall of Fame? I said,
oh. Where is it at?
It's at Mound City at the club up there, they call it. Up by the golf course. So it is, it's a hoot. It is an absolute hoot. And a bunch of old waterfowlers from way back in the past will be there.
Oh,
and,
what a blast.
And then Rob Boland, Boland Automotive, 10th and Mitchell in St. Joseph, Missouri. And there's a very deserving guy. He's a lifetime member of Ducks Unlimited. And just a wonderful, wonderful person. Now, he can't shoot very good, but he's a wonderful person. He really, really is. And then Art Van Meter is going to be inducted. Art passed last year on opening day duck season.
Oh, my gosh.
Right there beside us, the club south of us. I saw the ambulance pulling there, and I knew something serious was wrong. And I never met Art but once in passing. But everybody I talked to said he was one of the most wonderful people you could be around. So it's quite a... quite a ceremony. People get emotional. It's quite the deal.
How fun.
It is. It is.
What time does it start? Any idea?
Probably about 6 o'clock. I didn't look at the particulars. I think they have happy hour 6 to 7. Sometimes they get so happy they can't hardly stand it. But it's going to be. And today, isn't today the opening day of youth season, Mark?
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah. So you young fellows that are going to go duck hunting today, be very, very careful. Listen to whoever's taking you. Be very safe with that gun. Point in a safe direction. Only load it when they tell you. Unload it when they tell you. Say pleases and thank yous. You know, that wouldn't hurt at all. But I remember taking my boy Chris on opening day of youth season. And, of course, he's kind of a natural, I guess, is what you say, with a shotgun. And, boy, he smoked them. Man, he had 4 drakes and 2 gadwalls and a black goose all down in no time at all, you know. So, anyway, it's just that's a fun. It's a time for kids that they'll never forget.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I know some of my fondest memories were those days getting up and going to the duck blind with my dad.
Oh, yeah.
And just full of anticipation and
Giggle, and, laugh.
Yeah. And I mean, you're with your dad one-on-one. And,
yeah.
You know, what a great thing.
Yeah, that's why I think I like waterfowl hunting is I sit in a tree by yourself, and I like talking to people, as you can tell by doing talk radio. But you're there by yourself. You know, and when you're in a duck blind, I mean, some of the stories in there are true.
To share the experience with somebody else, that's what makes it so special.
I have Andy Burnham share his duck blind with me, and we poke at him. I mean, he's a Marine, so you got to watch it. He's violent, but he'll hit you in the mouth, you know, and justifiably, I might add, too, you know. But he takes it rather well. None of the deal. So we pick on him a little bit. I pick on Trevin Reed, too, every once in a while.
Yeah, he's a good target.
Yeah, he's a good target. What the hey. Speaking of Trevin Reed, if you're in the mode today, Mark, it'd be good for you to go get a brand-new Silverado.
I need to, yeah.
With the strike on, he's got a huge inventory. It's reduced down quite a little bit. I suppose it's down by 80%, 70%, something like that, but he's still got a great selection. And the 3/4 ton, which would really be good diesel for you, I think got $17,000 or maybe $18,000. I don't remember the number now. A rebate. Can you imagine that? That's
no.
The biggest rebate I think they've ever done. And then the Silverado pickups are $12,000 off. And as we talk every Saturday, the Reed family will never sell you anything. They'll help you buy one.
That's exactly how it is.
Exactly.
Non-commissioned salespeople, so they're not pressured. So they don't put any pressure on you. It's just such a refreshing way.
Yeah.
And I know my son bought a truck from them, and I was with him. And for 3 hours, we were there, 3.5 hours. And for 3 of those hours, I was talking to the salesman about fishing.
Yeah. Never did get around to the deal, per se.
My son was like, come on, Dad, I want to go drive my new truck.
Yeah, really. I was in there day before yesterday, and Jerry Diggs, an old buddy of mine, great shot. He came in and picked up a new one that he ordered. And it's a brown, kind of an odd-looking color, and it's so darn pretty. You want a moment alone with it, you know. It's just, and he put them ranch-style bumpers on it, and something just set it off. You know, just really, really pretty. But, boy, I tell you what, if, and, you know, here we are, Your son's bought one. I bought two. Andy's bought three. My boy bought one. My sister bought one. People coming from Des Moines, Iowa, Omaha, Nebraska, Manhattan, Kansas, Kansas City, all over the place. 28 minutes north of KCI, the deal of a lifetime. I think you ought to drive 28 minutes, save a lot of money myself.
Absolutely.
Personally, but what the hey. But beware of the deer if you're out amongst them. Reed Chevrolet, can't say enough good things about him. Just love those guys. I'm going to teach Trevin how to shoot one of these days. I've been working on him. You ought to hear him blow a duck call.
Is that leave something to be desired?
Ooh, I'm not going down that road. He's adequate.
Well.
And I think he'd be the first one to tell you. He's a C-plus duck caller.
Well, a lot worse than that.
Yeah, yeah. He's a good guy, though.
Oh, yeah.
No better.
Nope.
Anybody spills their blood on foreign soil, it's got a special place in my heart.
Yeah, you got that right.
Oh, what a great guy. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We're going to take you fishing here a little bit. The second half, we're going to go, we're going to the dogs. We're going to have John Serta, professional bird dog trainer, on. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest.
That's easy to say.
With Inspector Floyd Noy. Floyd Noy. From the Nice Telephone Company.
That's an old Inspector Clouseau reference there. Yeah.
Hey, what's the fishing like?
It's good. The water's cooling down. Lakes have not turned over yet, so that's yet to occur. And that'll make things tough when that happens. But they're moving a little shallower, starting to move into coves and creeks. I had the honor of taking a couple of disabled vets fishing last week. Dirk Washington and Mike Stewart got to take them fishing. They wanted to catfish. So we didn't do much except catfish, but we did real good. Caught a lot of blue cats on jugs. They'd never jug fished before.
Uh-huh.
And the fishing was a little on the tough side. Caught some channels and a couple of blues. One nice, my biggest one we had was maybe about 6 pounds, between 6 and 7 pounds. So that was a good one. They were thrilled. They'd never jug fished before, so I got a couple of dozen jugs. And the way I make these jugs, we take these styrofoam pool noodles and cut them into about 2-foot lengths and then take a PVC pipe that's the little bigger than the inside diameter uh-huh. of these pool noodles.
Uh-huh.
And you cap off one end, and then we take rebar and cut it into two-inch sections and put that inside the pipe. So what that does, and then we seal it with glue. So one end of the pipe is completely closed with a cap, and the other, the bottom side, has got a cap with an eye bolt in it.
Mm.
So we've got something to tie our line onto.
That makes it bob straight up and down?
Well, no. So that weight, you put it in, when you lay it down in the water, you put the weight at the opposite end of the hook.
Mm-hmm.
So that allows it to lay flat in the water.
Oh.
And then when you get a bite, it tilts
wow,
up.
Wow, cool.
So you can see from a long way away whether or not you've got a bite or whether or not you've got a fish uh-huh. on. So we'd go over, we'd set them out there in our cove, and we'd sit on the dock and catfish, and we could see whenever we get a bite. So we were constantly hopping in the boat.
Good.
Running over there and grabbing a fish and rebaiting them, and just had an absolute ball. He said that was the best trip he'd ever been on.
Wow.
He said, you know.
Was he just being nice?
No, he was thrilled. I mean, really? Absolutely. You could just see. Yeah, he said, I love to catfish. That's my favorite thing. But he said, when I go out, I usually catch one, sometimes two fish. And between the four of us, we had well over 40 for the weekend. And
shame he didn't hook up one of them old monster blues.
I know it, yeah. Well, now, he did have a couple on. And stripped the line off, and I was using 60-pound line, but stripped them off. They just didn't pay quite enough attention.
Oh.
Stripped all the line off.
Wow.
And wound up getting hung up, and both of them broke the line. So those had to be some toads.
Probably were.
Yeah.
Wow. 60-pound test.
But it was just so much fun. And I'm telling you, anybody that has a chance, I got involved with a group called CAMO, K-A-M-O, and you might look them up on the web.
Yes.
And get involved with these guys. I'm telling you, they enjoy fishing on a level that I kind of forgot about. I guess I do it often enough. You kind of take some things for granted, but they don't. And they enjoy this like I used to enjoy it. And that's what makes it so fun to take them fishing. And hunting the same way. It's the same way. They just enjoy the experience like you cannot believe. And it's such a gratifying thing to do. So you know, again, go to CAMO, check it out, and you can get involved in. And there's several events throughout the year that you can volunteer and help either take some of the vets hunting or fishing, or you can donate to the organization. And that, you know, that money is much needed and goes a long way. But, yeah, highly encourage you to get involved with them. It's the most gratifying thing I have ever
done. We had the guy in, the gentleman, what was his name? Do you remember? He's about CAMO. He was sat here in the chair. He was in the studio 2 weeks ago.
You would have to ask me.
Yes. Gray matter's not lining up anymore, is it?
Right.
What a nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
And busting his humps on this deal. And here's the whole thing about this guy. He doesn't have to do that.
No.
And he's doing it out of the kindness of his heart, you know, to help these vets. And, you know, we all could do better. You know, I know I can for sure, but we'll see. And we're working
on it.
It's
Bill Eckert. Yep.
What a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. CAMO Adventures, K-A-M-O. Check him out.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a great organization, great cause. Yeah, and like you said, he doesn't have to do this.
He's
very busy, but he got involved with it and
can't stop now.
No.
No.
It's exactly right.
It's the most addictive thing you can get involved with.
Yeah. Yep.
White bass.
Yeah. Starting to happen. They're back real shallow, back in the creeks, back in coves, anywhere where the wind's blowing. I even had a friend of mine call me. I was working, unfortunately, on Tuesday, and it was very windy Monday and Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, with the water cooling down and the wind blowing like it was, I just knew.
I knew
that the white bass had to be biting. And sure enough, got a call from a buddy of mine. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm working." He said, "You out in Blue Springs?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, I'm fishing Blue Springs Lake." I think it was about 10:30 when I talked to him. I said, "We've caught, like, almost 100 white bass."
Oh, my goodness.
Fishing from the bank, just walking the bank. So that's something that's, you know, really fun about the white bass this time of year, that you get a wind blowing and they'll get back in these little pockets, little coves, back in the backs of creeks, and they're real shallow. And if you can walk to them, some of these areas, they were throwing rooster tails, and he was even throwing one of these spoons that I like, a double W spoon that Vic Ertley sells out in Milford.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's only in 1 to 2 foot of water. So spoon's probably not your best choice, but it doesn't matter. I mean, when they're in their feeding like that, you can throw just about anything.
Zippo
at them.
Cigarette lighter with a treble hook on it,
right?
And they're on.
Yeah.
You know, when they're on.
Have you seen these? It's got a hook on it. It's a pair of breasts.
No, let's try it.
Yeah, that, I'm sure that would work.
I don't know why it wouldn't. It attracts a lot of people.
Yeah.
Seems to me like.
Yeah.
You know.
But
why not?
Yeah, and so anyway, that catfish are biting really good. Lake of the Ozarks streaming. Had a friend of mine went out to Milford. John King was out of Milford over this past weekend, and the lake is still, you know, 18, almost 20 foot high. And he said that the state park marina, the ramp is open, but the marina is shut down, and it has been shut down. He said there's a lot of damage to those docks.
Yes.
Terrible. It doesn't sound good at all.
Mm-mm.
And Perry's still real high. They're catching some fish out there. And I mentioned last week, talked to Chap Martin, my guide buddy over in Kansas. He thought that the winter fishing on Perry was going to probably be as good as it's ever been. So
there's still
some high water, but should bode well for the winter fishing if they ever get these lakes under control.
Yeah,
I don't know
if they ever will. I mean, it's just craziest pattern I've ever saw in my life.
I've never seen anything like it.
Never ever. You know,
I mean, still 18 foot water on Milford.
The other day,
30 on Tuttle.
Yeah, 2 days ago at noon. I read the meter at Rulo off my phone, and I think I'm right on this. It might have been one other time in between there, but I think it was the first time it went into moderate flood stage, which is still 5 foot above the norm.
Good gosh.
You know, and it was just crazy. You know, it's dropping a little bit yesterday, dropped about an inch yesterday. But, man, I'll tell you what, and they're still running 80,000 cubic feet, talking about upping it.
How is that? Why is it necessary? That is insane.
And, remember the picture that Buster Slusher sent us?
Yeah, right.
And it was like an 18-foot drift he was standing behind. You know, I mean, you can't believe what you're seeing up there.
Wow.
And Fort Peck, which is the first dam on the Missouri River, is still 7.4 feet above power pool, and they've opened it up and ran it all summer. You know,
Hard to even imagine.
And they can't get it down. And that dam is very suspect. And they want to do $75 million worth of repairs on it, but they can't get out there to do the repairs.
But yeah, they got to run water.
Randall's High, all of them, Owyhee, I mean, all those lakes up through there are just...
What a mess.
Oh, unbelievable. Speaking of a mess, how's my good friend Joe Falco doing?
Good. I didn't talk to him this past week. I got to get hold of him. They had that tournament last week, but the weather was
I wondered how they
terrible.
Did.
I mean, it rained half the
terrible.
Day, and
yeah.
So I don't know how the turnout was, but that was the kayak tournament. And they sell those Jackson kayaks out there. And, you know, that touted to be the most stable in the industry.
Great.
So, yeah.
You know, with this water out, and if you guys want to shoot some ducks. Can't get into Bob Brown. The county road's still underwater out there, but... And part of it was gone, but you could come up the Missouri River, I guess, maybe in a boat. But anyway, if you could get out there somehow, and this will probably drop out a little bit. You take a Jackson kayak. There is so vast. There'll be places out there where there'll be, and you mark my word, there'll be 10,000 mallards sitting in a little spot out of the wind. You could take a Jackson kayak out there and set you a dozen decoy, turn on a mojo, and you'll have the duck shoot of your life.
Oh, yeah. Have fun.
Yeah, because you got to be able to go across 40 acres of 6-inch, 8-inch water, you know, foot deep water. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, it would.
And after I saw that one guy come out of Bob Brown last year with that camo one, the dog on it and decoy bag, and I couldn't believe the stability of those things.
Yeah, that's the big selling point on those things. I mean, if you're going to be in a kayak, you might as well have the one that's the most stable.
Yeah, had an electric trolling motor on it.
Yeah, yeah. And you can get them with a trolling motor or a pedaling system.
Up the creek he came. I couldn't believe it.
That is so cool.
Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah, that's Sportsman's Outfit and Marine. They are the distributor for Jackson. So, yeah, check those out.
We got to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to try our best to get a hold of the professional bird dog trainer. Well, he's a professional dog trainer. I always say bird dog. He can train about anything. John Serta, he's always a fun guest, and we have a giggle with him every time he's on the air. So you're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We are proudly brought to you by King City Lumber Company, King City, Missouri, home of Roger Worley. Maybe not people know who all-pro was Roger Worley out of King City, Missouri. But they make the finest buildings. If you guys are looking for an outbuilding, maybe a garage, a loafing shed, some place to park your combine, they're building these new sheds. Well, it's not new, but they've been doing it for several years, but the people build one and live in them. That's how airtight they are. That's how secure they are. They're a wonderful organization. I've never been around anybody any nicer, more thorough, and more professional than King City Lumber Company. And I've got a lot of friends that have had King City Lumber build their outbuildings, hay sheds, barns, garages, the whole work. So if you want professionalism, And done right with master craftsmen with, A1 material, then you're going to look at King City Lumber, kingcitylumber.com. Go to the website. First time I was there, I spent 30 minutes on it. Wonderful, wonderful organization. So go by and check them out. I can't believe I'm losing my voice again. I got to get a shot of whiskey. Anybody got any whiskey around this place?
That'll clear you out.
Man. That bug or whatever's going around, I probably got it. By the magic of the telephone, I don't know if I'm going to hang in here or not. I'm losing my voice. Our best friend of the show, one of our best friends, I should say, the professional, as we call him, John Serta, professional dog trainer extraordinaire, thegundog.com, thegundog.com. My goodness. John, how are you doing this morning? Have you been bitten yet today?
Well, I have not been bitten yet today, but the day is early, as I always say. So I'm actually sitting here in the plush studio, Studio 111 of White Wing Lodge down in Branson.
Cool.
And my wife has graciously allowed me to come out in the studio. So I wouldn't have to sit in the bathroom and do this radio show.
That's very nice of her, Ed. This early in the morning,
she's a sweetheart, isn't she?
You owe her.
Yeah. She is a sweetheart, that's for sure.
As they said on Caddyshack, you're a peach. Mrs. Haverkam, you're a peach. I'm trying to drink water and get my throat cleared up just a little bit. I've got a little tickle in it this morning for some reason. John, this is next Saturday. Well, today is youth season for the waterfowlers. Next Saturday is the opening day of duck season. And that poor old dog's probably spent a lot of time in his kennel over the off season. What do you do? Is it too late to get him kind of in shape, or do you need to work on him a little bit more?
Well, obviously, if opening day is next week, you're not going to have a whole lot of time to work him. But if you're talking waterfowl dogs, there's not as much stress on a waterfowl dog as there is an upland dog. Obviously, you know, an upland dog's going to be out there running around for miles and miles, whereas most of your waterfowl dogs are going to be sitting right there in the blind with you, and then they just go out whenever you have a bird down. And swimming isn't really that difficult.
Yeah.
For a waterfowl dog, but it is great exercise, by the way, swimming is.
Sure.
But no, I wouldn't worry a whole lot, but even so, the more you can get them out and work them just on some basic line drills or signals, the left, right, back, whatever you want to work them on, it's just going to make them a lot snappier in the blind. But no, you shouldn't worry too much about him being too out of shape unless they look like their belly's dragging the ground. And I've seen a few of those, by the way.
I'll bet you have. One thing, I've got a buddy, and he said for me to ask you this question. He's got a dog last year was lights out. It was just a pup. It was his first year of waterfowling. This year, it's all fun and games. He's going out. This is a two-year-old dog. He picks up the duck, and about halfway back, spits it out, goes back to the blind. And he has to resend him and resend him about a third time. That dog goes back out and picks up the duck. And I said, I don't know what's going on there. I'll ask John, what do you think is going on with that dog?
Well, Fred, whenever you have a dog that will bring a bird back partway, spit it out, and then go do something else, it could be several things. One of them, it could be you just don't really care. Mm-hmm. And it could also be a defiance as far as the owner. Some dogs will literally put their paws on top of the bird and dare you to come and get it from them. That can be handled, though. And, of course, you know, I always tell you that when dogs start exhibiting that kind of behavior, you just go ahead and force fetch them, and you're pretty much guaranteed that that's not going to happen again. And if it does happen again, if they're force fetched, then you know how to go out and make that dog do what you just told it to do. Go ahead.
What is force fetching?
Well, funny you should ask. Force fetching is basically teaching the dog to retrieve in reverse. So rather than throwing your dummy, your bumper, your dead bird, whatever it is you're using out, and telling the dog to go pick it up, what you do is you start by putting it in the dog's mouth and teaching it to hold. So the dog is taught to hold on command and drop on command, and he's not to drop it until you tell him to. That would stop a lot of the nonsense of coming out of the water, shaking, dropping the duck right there, and then coming on into the blind. So when they're taught to fetch, hold, and drop, that takes care of a lot of the nonsense that goes out there with the younger dogs especially.
Do you think I could, maybe he's too far gone, do you think I could teach Mark Tobin to force fetch retrieve?
Well, if you try and teach Mark to force fetch, you're probably going to have to put a shock collar on him. I don't know if he'd sit still for that. I wouldn't.
Yeah. I'm just worried about him now. He will pick him up in his teeth. I will give you that. But he'll bring him about halfway back, and he spits them out, too, for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You remember all the hunts that we used to do?
Oh, sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, you might remember a guy by the name of Mark Borsering. Now, I actually literally saw him take a bird, bite the head off of it so he could scare all the scouts, and that was just something stuck in my head.
Yeah, that would stick with you.
That's a strange human.
Yeah. He is strange.
I've got a call the other night, a guy looking for Llewellyn Setter. And I got on the internet and played around with it a little bit. He says they're like hen's teeth. First thing, Llewellyn setter, is that just a trade name for the setter?
Well, not necessarily. Llewellyn setters, they are actually a line of setters. And the same way as just getting any bloodline of any dog, you go to a bloodline that is known and it's productive all the time. You can name it the Fred Ramsey setter, but people would know what it was. Mm-hmm. So they're definitely a line of setters, and they're known because they're generally easier to train. And, well, I'll tell you what, that makes my job a lot easier, but you find one, and they don't generally last too long. So if you have a chance to get one, I would not talk you out. I'm not a big setter person, but I'm telling you what, if you get a dog that's going to go out there and point and retrieve and honor and do everything and have a good attitude about doing it, shoot, I don't care what it is, short tail, long tail, anything. Just they're gun dogs, so yeah. It doesn't matter what the name is.
Why did you said that dog's not going to last too long? What do you mean by that?
Well, that means if you know there's one available, you better grab it.
Okay.
Because they do not last. For instance, we had a group of brothers that used to hunt up there with us, the Fuson boys.
Mm-hmm.
And he is consistently producing setters, and sometimes by accident, that's because he doesn't take care of where the female is when she's in heat, but consistently producing pups. And I mean, I've trained a lot of his dogs, and we'll put that dog on one bird. By the way, Llewellyn setter.
Mm-hmm.
Put that dog on one bird. And the first bird you put it on, wham, I mean, it is on point, solid, and, of course, everything else is downhill from there. So you just do the basic training. I had a guy call me that I hadn't talked to in years and told him about these three pups that Eric had. And, by golly, a week later when he called, see, I think I'll get one of those pups. Well, sorry, they're all gone. So, yeah. Grab them when you can.
Interesting.
Interesting, isn't it? I guess, I don't know how to put this. Are they a natural? Is that what goes on, the bloodline, the genetic code in them makes them a natural?
Well, Fred, it is. I mean, when you take that dog out and put it on the first bird and it points, that I didn't teach it. The owner didn't teach it. It's in the bloodline, and it's all genetics. So you find a good female and a good male or several good females that keep producing. There is what you go breed to, and that is definitely in their bloodlines.
Kind of a pricey dog, what I found on the internet.
Well, any dog that has a good bloodline, good pedigree don't mean a whole lot, but what they do out in the field does. But you can pay for them, but I'm going to guarantee you this. If you have to pay $1,500, a couple thousand dollars for a dog that's guaranteed, by golly, you can go out there and spend $1,000 for a dog, and it may not turn out at all.
Sure.
But that's why you got to go by the track record. I tell people all the time, go look at the male, look at the female, see what they do out in the field. And if mom and dad are out there doing the thing they're supposed to do, well, chances are the pup's going to do it. And you're a lot safer doing that than just buying one out of the newspaper.
TheGunDog.com. Our guest is John Serta, professional trainer. Not just an average trainer, he's a professional trainer. If you've got an issue with your dog, get a hold of John, and he will either guide you through it or personally, maybe if you want to take him out to the kennel, and he'll train him and put him on some birds. The other thing that I have a hard time, and we've talked about this before, the pointing lab syndrome, I call it. And this is the big deal right now. You get a Labrador, you got the best of both worlds, goes out and picks up your duck, but he's supposed to point roosters. Is that a genetic, is that a learned behavior versus a genetic behavior?
Well, it's definitely not a learned behavior in a lot of cases. A lot of people don't realize it, but there's pointer in labs from way, way back. Now, some of those genes have managed to stick around, and it used to be that they would try and stop a lab from pointing. They would actually mark him down his trout. Boy, I'll tell you what, you get a lab that points down and goes out in the water and gets your duck. Well, why would you want to discourage that? And they are doing it naturally. Same situation with the labs. As we go out, we have an evaluation process for all the dogs that come in. And when you take a lab out and put it on a bird and it points the first bird, well, that just tells you something. I didn't teach it. The owner didn't teach it. It's in their bloodline. Mm-hmm. So pointing labs are the real deal.
Hmm. Interesting. I got an argument about it.
Really?
I think it's a trained behavior, but maybe some of them got it. I don't know.
Well, and Fred liked to say, you know, with bloodlines, you got to watch them because, say, this dog points and the other dog doesn't point. Well, if you're halfway intelligent, you're going to breed to the dog that points.
Yeah.
Breed a dog that points to a dog that points. I don't care if it's a Chihuahua. You know, why not?
Yeah.
So pointing labs that point, breed to other pointing labs that point, and they just carry on that genetic. So why wouldn't that be a good deal?
That's a good deal.
That's a good deal. Mark went, huh? I pointed at me. Went,
my phone rang. It was Richard Bowling. He was trying to get, I don't know why he's calling me on the show.
Yeah, he's probably catching fish.
Yeah, right. Yeah, rub add insult to injury. You know, we've talked before, John, about dogs' favorite foods, you know, breakfast being a poached egg and dessert a popsicle.
Right.
And you obviously feed dogs. I found another of their favorite foods. Do you know what their other favorite foods are?
What is the other dog's favorite food?
What is it, Tobin?
It's anything on your plate.
anything on my plate. Wow, that's accurate.
That's very accurate, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah,
they're great beggars when it's supper time, that's for sure.
Okay.
You know, if you're coming to a strange dog, you have said before, don't pet him on the head. Is that right? I mean, if you're coming and there's a dog that comes up to you, what is the best way to show affection or, you know, be friendly to a dog? What's the do's and don'ts?
Well, what I tell people is whenever you're approaching a dog that you don't know, well, the dog may be fine and it may not be. Sometimes they don't show signs that they're going to be a dangerous type of a dog. So don't run up there and try and pat them on the head. That's why I keep telling you guys that. Don't pat them on the head because anytime you put your hand over their head, if the dog is a little bit on the aggressive side, the first thing he's going to do is put his little beak up there and snap at you. So we tell people, like you've seen before, put your palm out and palm up and let him smell your hand. And you can say a few nice words. It doesn't matter what you're saying. It's the sound that he's picking up on.
Mm-hmm.
And if he allows you to put your hand on his neck, I wouldn't say on top of his head, then slide it down his back, give him a little pat. Good boy. What's going on? Whatever you want to say to him, you'll know real quick. Now, if you put your hand out there and you only come back with a couple of fingers, I'd just leave that dog alone.
I see people talking to dogs like they're a human.
Yeah.
What is the best way to communicate with them? Is it, you know, to talk like that, or should you use more just motions and hand gestures or whatever?
Well, I'll tell you what, and that's a really, really good question there, Mark, because when I'm working with dogs, voice is very important. I work to keep my voice at a higher pitch. They seem to like that better than a loud, growly, growly sound. So if the dog thinks you're growling, he's going to want to growl back. But nice, high, soft tone is what you want to use with dogs that you don't know or even do know. So when we're training dogs, we use the high-pitched sounds and save the growly stuff to show the dog that this is not what you're supposed to do and change your ways.
Invariably, I'm hearing pockets of quail. I'm hearing some guys, I talked to some guys the other day, and they said, man, they can't believe the quail they're seeing. And I'm just the opposite. I can't believe I'm not seeing any quail. But this dog, you finally knock one of these quail down, and he eats the first one. Invariably, I'll have someone say something to me before the season's over about the dog. And we've talked about this before, John, but, you know, is that the wrong diet for the dog? Is that just going to be the way it is? Or what? How do you correct that if you want to, type thing?
Yeah, no. Eating a bird is never acceptable. So one thing is if they do eat the bird, those beaks and feet don't digest very well, and it can do some damage. So, no, But the only way you're going to fix that, once they start that nonsense, is to go ahead and have them force fetch. And again, it just goes back to taking that bird, because that's what he's doing wrong, is he's eating the bird, not the bumper or the dummy, and making him hold it in his mouth. And we use frozen birds up there, Fred, so freeze the bird so he can't get his teeth into it, and then teach him to hold it, and then drop on command. Now, every now and then, they don't want to release it. And there's methods that we use to get them to open their mouth. But I would not use the old-time trainer's method of wrapping barbed wire around a bird and then making them hold it. It will teach them to be soft-mouthed, but it'll also teach them don't pick that bird up at all anymore.
Yeah, right.
So we try and teach them to hold a frozen bird, and then we go to what we call a soft bird. And then we have the flopping birds, which is the ones that really flop all around, and the dogs that are less enthusiastic will just grab it out of instinct. So, yep, that's how we do that.
One thing I want to pass on, too, before you get this dog out and you get after it again, have him checked out. Jim Sparks, he's a veterinarian here in Riverside at 4825 Northwest Gateway, Riverside, Missouri, called Eagle Animal Hospital. I've been around a lot of vets. And he's as good as it gets. So maybe you need a little tune-up for the dog and check him out before you go. John, we're out of time. How do they get a hold of you?
Well, Fred, they can get a hold of me. Best way is probably going to go ahead and just send me an email. It's gundogpro@gmail.com. Gundogpro@gmail.com. They can always get on my website, www.thegundog.com, and that'll get them in contact with me.
You know, this time of year, we're out of time, but I get to thinking about old Hackett, how you retrieved him from the grave, basically. That was a miracle.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Fred, before we have to get out of here, go to my website, and there's a story about Hackett on there. You want to read it when you're by yourself, because I guarantee you will be blubbering by the time you get done with it.
My co-host blubbers here crying every time we get talking about dogs anyway. He remembers his old Beagle in the backyard. Wasn't he a good one?
Patches.
Yeah, he's a good dog.
It was a female. It was a non-barking Beagle. Yeah. If she did, she would get excited when she'd see a squirrel. And if a bark came out, it was the most retarded sound you've ever heard. Really spastic.
John, thank you. You've always been a great guest here, and we appreciate you probably more than you'll ever know. And you've helped out a lot of hunters over the years. You ought to be proud of yourself and the professionalism that you do. And I just think you're a wonderful human. Besides all the volunteer work you do for the Scouts organization, you're a fantastic person. Thank you for taking time out of your day to join us.
You got it, Fred.
All right, buddy.
The best dog trainer in the galaxy. Gundogpro@gmail.com.
Good guy.
Get a hold of him that way. Yeah. Check out his website, too.
Yeah, good guy. You know, unbelievable. You get down on all fours and talk to the dogs. I was up there. I said, John, get up. You look bad down there. The dog can't understand a word you're saying. He said he does, too.
Yeah, and he's serious.
Yeah, that's the problem with it.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you on a great outdoor.
Have a great week. So long, everybody.